from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of Butler University's annual Rejoice Holiday Concert.
I'll take a look at the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker.
And I'll find out what makes the Santas dance at the ISO's Yuletide Show. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call What Do We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Butler University's long tradition of putting on a grand Christmas concert for the community continues with this year's edition of Rejoice on Friday, December 12th and Saturday, December 13th at 7:30 at Clues Memorial Hall. Sharon Gamble invited Dr. Eric Stark, Director of Choral Activities at Butler, to tell us about the many ensembles that come together for the concerts.
Rejoice has been going on a few years now.
That's right. We're about to come up to a big birthday. In next year, we will. This
will
is our 29th year
no
this year.
No way.
Can
oh
you believe
my
it?
Gosh, no.
Because I'm only 29.
Well,
so. Hey now.
You did not start Rejoice.
No, I didn't. But my predecessor did. My predecessors, Henry Leck and Michael Schossberger, who were the choral faculty at Butler University back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry has just retired from the university a year ago, as you may know, although he's still very active with the children's choir here in town.
Good.
Great, wonderful. For that.
Does he still teach privately?
He's still doing some teaching for us. We have a graduate Good. Program in choral conducting at Butler, and he teaches a couple of our students.
Good.
But mostly his work is with the ICC, and he's guest conducting and adjudicating and clinicking around the world, quite literally.
So he's not bored.
He has plenty to keep busy with. He's doing well.
He's not sitting there going, I want to be you.
But these guys started this concert... you know, I wasn't there at the conversation, but way back, and it was originally performed here downtown, not too far from where we're sitting at this moment, at the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul.
Oh.
And when I first started teaching at Butler, which was in the fall of 1996, we were still doing the concerts there. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful space, very resonant, reverberant, lovely space to go to.
But why not on campus?
Well, that's what we wondered. And I think it must have... revolved around, as many things on our campus do, Clues Hall and its schedule.
Sure.
When our incoming at the time president, beloved Bobby Fong, came, we kind of had a moment of head scratching together and said, why don't we see if we can make this happen on our campus?
Right.
Because this is a concert that's presented as Butler's gift to the community, free
right.
of charge to attend. It's free. It would make sense to bring it on campus. And so ever since that time, we have performed in Clues, with one exception. In 2001, we felt it would be more appropriate to do Rejoice that year in a church setting just because
sure.
of what had happened. And so we brought the concert to North United Methodist Church, 38th and Meridian. But every other year, it's been at Clues, and the audience has been growing. We couldn't fit half of our audience in Saints Peter and Paul anymore.
I was picturing that because I used to go hear the Chamber Orchestra's Messiah at Saints
sure,
Peter and Paul,
yeah.
but again, there's only so many seats.
Yes, exactly. It is a big space, but you can almost get 1,000 people in there, where mm-hmm. at Clues we can do twice that.
Right. A little side trip here for a second. Tell me your feelings as a conductor about Schrott Hall.
The Schrott Center for the Arts, I love it. It fits a need that we've had on our campus for a long, long time. Clues, of course, is a state-of-the-art, wonderful space for us, but it's not an ideal place for a guy like me who has a choir of 40 to 50 undergraduate voice majors. It's simply too big. It's too vast.
The sound gets
lost.
And I would think it would get a little lost even on stage, even with reflectors.
It does, although it's made much better. And plus, it's got 2,200 seats out there, so unless you have a lot of friends, it looks like not many people care what you're doing
right.
When you perform there. there, except for Rejoice, which we do fill. The Schrott, the stage is the same size. It's actually a foot or so larger in one of its dimensions. I don't remember which. But at the auditorium itself is a more modest size, about a little under 500 seats, as you know. And we love the acoustics in there. The kids love to sing there. We're learning still. It's taking us a while to kind of figure out because it's so different from our rehearsal space, but it's challenging us to be better musicians.
So that answers goes towards answering one of my questions, which is for Rejoice, do you get any – how much rehearsal time do you get in Clues?
Well, December is a very busy month in the hall, and Nutcracker is in the weekend before us, and so they don't load out until Monday morning of Rejoice week, which means sometimes we can be in there on a Monday afternoon or evening, but the stage is not ready for us, so we just kind of stand under a bare light bulb and sing. It's not until Tuesday that they usually get the shell in and the acoustical clouds lowered, and so that really just gives us 3 nights to get used to the sound. And if we have instrumental ensemble, as we do this year, the Butler Symphony Orchestra is playing with us. You know, it takes a while to kind of get it all figured out, even where we're going to stand, where we're going to put people.
You probably, just from the years of experience, have some general advice you give your singers about what it's going to be going from your rehearsal space into a big hall.
It's a couple of things. You know, first of all, use your ears, but then don't rely on your ears for things like tempo, because by the time the sound comes back to them from the back wall of the auditorium, it's already happened a couple of seconds ago, just about. But be listening to your fellow singers. Make sure we're attending to issues of blend and intonation and vowel shape that we're used to doing in the rehearsal hall. And always watch the conductor.
Yes. How does it change your conducting to be in a big space like that?
It doesn't. The pattern, you know, all of that kind of stays the same, provided that the lighting and the logistics have been arranged so that people can see the conductor. But of course, the process of morphing from rehearsal conductor to performance conductor is a different one regardless of the hall.
And then there's an additional role when the orchestra is playing with you, because you're conducting both.
Mm-hmm, right.
But you have to, I assume, make your gestures a little bigger so the orchestra, which is, I assume the orchestra
is in the pit. I generally don't.
Is the orchestra in the pit?
The orchestra is on stage.
Is on stage. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that helps. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to keep it all kind of the same, and my conducting students would tell you that Dr. Stark's number one rule for conducting is less is more. And so I try not to be one of these kind of big wingspan conductors that hovers over everything like a pterodactyl. Although
I'm
sure I have my moments.
Conducting, I love it. So, repertoire for this year.
Oh, it's all kinds
of
great stuff. Yeah. Well, we're thrilled to have, as always, a mix of both familiar and new kinds of things, and that extends to the repertoire that we're performing, but also to the groups that we have. Because of the aforementioned retirement of my dear friend and colleague, Henry Leck, I have a new colleague at Butler, Dr. John Perkins, who's in his first semester and doing a wonderful job. He's conducting our university chorus, which has a lot of non-majors in it, actually. Out of 50 students, I think over 40 are non-music students, which we're thrilled about.
That's terrific.
You know, brilliant students studying the sciences, studying whatever. And then we've also launched a women's chorus this year, and Dr. Perkins is leading that group as well. So both those groups will be performing, so a new and an old group. I'll be conducting the Butler Chorale and the Butler Chamber Singers, and I mentioned the Butler Symphony Orchestra as well, under the direction of its conductor, Professor Richard Alden Clark. And we're all kind of tag-teaming the conducting responsibilities, so... when one of us finishes, another one is ready to jump up on the box and take the reins. We are also launching a new program designed to highlight not just talented high school choral singers in the area, but Butler alums who are doing well.
Really?
And so this year, we have a high school choir partner that will be singing both performances with us at Rejoice. It's the choir from Newcastle High School, the Chorale, and they are under the direction of one of our alums from 2008, John Doty. John sang in my choir, took my conducting class, and actually he's from my hometown, Columbus, Indiana, and his whole family is music and music teachers. He did his student teaching at Newcastle High School, and then when there was a retirement there, was hired to take the program over. And I've been out and worked with them a couple of times in previous years. They always sing really beautifully and well, and they're so enthusiastic. So they're going to come, sing a couple selections on their own on our stage, and then all of the choirs and the orchestra will join together at the end of the performance. So we're hoping to feature kind of the next generation of singers, as well as the students who've passed through the halls some years ago and who are leading those new singers now.
I love the idea of highlighting Butler grads.
Well, it's a perfect time to do it, too, because, of course, at the holidays, we all turn into kind of sentimental fools.
And, well, that never happens, certainly.
But we all just kind of think longingly on the people who've been in our lives and have fond memories about them. And you know, it's inevitable as we get older. You know, some of our family members have departed, but we still carry them with us in our hearts. And so the holidays are a wonderful time for us at Butler to kind of bring the family back together and to do it in a way that we're celebrating and sharing with our community family as well at this wonderful concert called Rejoice.
What is the piece you're most excited about on this concert?
Oh, how long do we have to talk about, Rep? Some of your audience members who come, your listeners who come to the concert will hear sometimes all of the choir singing together with the orchestra, sometimes all of the choir singing together a cappella, sometimes individual choirs singing by themselves. And so my answer is going to kind of show a little bit of that diversity. We're going to open the concert with choirs and orchestra doing a choral processional. The singers will process. The orchestra will already be on stage.
it's hard to process when you play cello or bass.
Out of the way, I can't get my my bass bow past your chair. It's a beautiful setting of the familiar tune, What Child Is This, by Alaskan composer and conductor Grant Cochran. It starts and ends kind of contemplatively, but it has this beautiful, wonderful climax in the middle. We think that's going to be a really neat way to start the program, and a little bit unusual. Near the end of the concert, the combined choirs with our high school partners from Newcastle will sing Somewhere in My Memory from the movie Home Alone, John Williams' tune, with orchestra. And then we'll end the concert with Handel's great masterwork, the Hallelujah Chorus. And in between, you'll hear all kinds of stuff. My Butler Chorale is doing one of the Christmas motets by Francis Poulenc, Odie Christus Natus Est, which is quirky and beguiling and beautiful,
and not easy to sing.
It's kind of out there.
Yeah.
Very rhythmic, very unpredictable. And my basses were asking me last week, "Is that supposed to be an A flat?" I said, "Oh yeah, it's supposed to be an A flat." Well, the altos are singing a G. I said, "Well, welcome to the choral music of Francis Poulenc." That's exactly right. And then we're also doing a wonderful piece called "Run Toboggan Run" by Minnesota composer Abby Batinas. Now, if I may be permitted a little bit of explanation, Abby is great niece of Alfred Burt and that whole family of composers from the 40s and 50s and 60s. You may be familiar, your listeners are familiar with the Alfred Burt carols. Well, the Burt family published as their Christmas card every year a carol that would be written out, poem and music, on a mailer that they would send to all their, and Caroling, Caroling, Now We Go is one of those. Some Children See Him is another one. Well, Abby's the great niece, the grandniece, and she's written Run Toboggan Run, which is kind of a catalog aria of all of the winter garments one needs to go sledding. So caps and mittens and hats with snaps and all of this great stuff. And it's kind of a novelty piece, but it's a lot of fun to sing.
What a treat.
It's really cool. University Choir, under the direction of John Perkins, is doing a beautiful setting of the O Magnum Mysterium text by kind of it composer Ola Yelo. Norwegian composer, very young guy, I think he's about 34, that's for choir and cello accompaniment. And Professor Bill Grubb from our faculty will be playing the cello. And then we've also got familiar things like We Wish You a Merry Christmas and O Little Town of Bethlehem and things that the audience members will recognize right away. So a big variety of great stuff.
Sharon Gamble with Dr. Eric Stark, Director of Choral Activities at Butler University. You can hear Rejoice on Friday, December 12th and Saturday, December 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Clues Memorial Hall. The concerts are free, but tickets are required. To get yours, go to clueshall.org/events, then /event, then 333-Rejoice. Again, that's clueshall.org/events/event. 333-Rejoice, or maybe you should just Google it. Or you can just search for Butler University Rejoice 2014.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker takes place in a Victorian Indianapolis on the stage of the Scottish Rite Cathedral. Travis DiNicola sat down with the ISB's artistic director, Victoria Liris, and Guy Jo Gordon, director of community relations for the Indy 11 Soccer Club, which is partnering with the ballet.
Vicky, Guy Jo, welcome to Art of the Matter, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. Thank
happy
you for having us.
Happy holidays to you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great to have you both here today. This is going to be fun. Ballet and soccer. But before we get into that partnership and all those cool things, Vicky, I want to talk with you just a minute about Indianapolis School of Ballet, because you run a fabulous ballet company. And, of course, Nutcracker is part of your annual production. Give me just a little background on the school itself, if you will.
Yes. The Indianapolis School of Ballet is now well into its ninth year. And this is our eighth annual production of The Nutcracker, and this year we are presenting the largest cast ever with 85 members, cast
awesome.
Members. Yeah, so it's very exciting. And, of course, the school is located in downtown Indianapolis at 502 North Capitol Avenue, and you could find us on the website at indieballet.org.
Mm-hmm.
And we provide classes in three different programs. Our young children's program is for ages 4 through 7. The pre-professional track for the serious-minded student is about 7, 8 years of age through 17, 18. And, of course, our open dance program is for adults
mm-hmm.
and for teens who wish to pursue this more for not necessarily just recreational, but for health reasons also. It's a wonderful form of exercise.
Now, the Nutcracker production that you do, it includes students from the school as well as professional guest artists that you bring in, correct?
Yes. Yes, it does. The majority of the dancers, of course, are students of the school.
Sure. Now, do they audition to get in a Nutcracker, or how does that happen?
Yes. Every August. Mm-hmm. I believe this year was August 25th. We had our audition. And again, it was one of the largest auditions we had, probably about 85 or 90 dancers, and mm-hmm. the majority of them are in the production. So it's exciting. And then as far as guest artists, we have this year we have three Sugar Plums and three Snow Queens alternating the roles. We have a graduate from ISB, Betsy Boxberger, Chloe Durier, who has also performed with us before, and she just graduated for Indiana University Ballet mm-hmm. Theater. And also a sophomore at Indiana University, Rafaela Stroik, is joining us this year. And we have two very handsome cavaliers, that being Colin Ellis, who is also a sophomore at Indiana University, and the very handsome and wonderful Timothy June from Dance Kaleidoscope.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's very cool. And that's one of the things that I really like about your productions is that, you know, you have this mix of both your students plus these professional dancers, guest artists that you're bringing in. And it's great both for the audience because, you know, maybe if you don't have a kid in the ballet, there's still a lot to see. And you're nice, a great production. But it's also great for your students to be able to have that opportunity to dance with these a little bit older professional students or dancers.
Absolutely. Or college level
students.
And,
sure.
And the tie to Indiana University is that I'm adjunct faculty there. So it's wonderful that I get to work with these dancers and get to know them. But it's a great opportunity for them as well because, yes, they're older and a bit more accomplished, but they're wonderful resume builders for mm-hm them, too, to be able to dance George Balanchine's Grand Pas de Deux and Robert Rodham's Snow Pas is they're wonderful opportunities for them. And, of course, we have to mention that Paul Vitale will be returning mm-hmm. to be Drosselmeyer for us again this year.
Yeah, he's a great guest professional artist as well.
Yeah, yes, he was my partner at Pennsylvania Ballet, and we have a very, very long friendship. I'm not going to say how many years. I'll give away my age.
Well, one of the things that's also very special about ISB's Nutcracker is not just the great dancing, but the location at Scottish Rite Cathedral.
Yes.
It's pretty fantastic. Tell me a bit about that, because that's your performance home.
Yes, yes. I walked into the Scottish Rite Cathedral in the spring of 2007. I was looking for a location downtown, and the theater had not been used for a couple of years there. And I am so pleased and blessed that they opened this opportunity for us, and we have developed such a wonderful partnership with the Scottish Rite Cathedral, and it really is our home-based theater, and we do both of our productions, Nutcracker and our spring main stage production there, and it's a great working relationship and respect of both organizations.
Excellent. And speaking of respective organizations, you've obviously gotten the respect of Indie 11, and that's why we have Guy Jo here. And it's awesome to have you here. As we were talking before, I'm a big fan of Indie 11 and what you guys are doing.
Appreciate that.
You know, both on the field and off. And that's part of why you're here as well. I mean, you guys have the teams really got involved, the team, the ownership, the staff, with the community in so many ways, it seems. And that's a part of your plan, right?
It is. I mean, we came out of a passion project idea out of Ersal Özdemir. He's behind this because he loves soccer, not because he wants to necessarily turn a big, huge profit. He just loves the game and wants to add to the sport landscape here in Indianapolis. And everyone he's brought on since then has that same passion that runs through the organization, starting with Peter at the top and making all its way down. So we really made a concerted effort when we first came onto the scene to reach out to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer, unlike other sports, it's really about the community. People aren't just soccer fans for 3 months and then they forget about it. This is their lifestyle. And so with that said, we wanted to really reach out and make those connections, but also reinforce them, not only through traditional sport outreach, but through the arts. We feel that soccer fans, don't just like soccer. They like to check out an art gallery. They like
sure.
to, you know, check out the ballet. They have very diverse interests, so we wanted to make sure that we involved as much of the arts community as we could.
So how did Indy 11 and the Indianapolis School of Ballet get connected then?
Well, we got connected through a mutual friend who she connected me with Peter Wilt, who's the general manager.
Mm-hmm.
And we met, Guy Jo and Peter and I met, and we talked about the parallels between soccer and ballet, and there are many. And it doesn't hurt that I'm a big soccer enthusiast mm-hmm. myself, having Greek origins. and my mom is probably the biggest fan in Indianapolis, probably close to Mr. Özdemir. and so we started chatting about how we can collaborate. And Peter asked me if I could create a production, which we did. We did a dance called ISB Does the Soccer Dance.
Right, and this took place during
the
halftime.
Yes.
In fact, it was the first win for Indy 11.
It was, awesome.
Yes.
It was October 11th.
Yes.
It was halftime of our October 11th game, which is our first home win.
Yes.
So
first home win, yeah.
So hopefully ISB was the lucky
right.
charm. That and the pink socks. and we had Peter, I asked Peter, well, how many dancers would you like? He said, well, 11, at least 11. And I said, well, what about 2 sets of 11? So mm-hmm. we have like a real game out there.
Yeah.
So that's what it became. It became this dance I choreographed with 3.5 minutes.
That was a really fun piece of choreography.
Yes, yeah. For 22 dancers, and I really wanted it to project out into the fields
sure.
and to portray some of the moves that
And you could see sort of soccer moves being interpreted
absolutely.
In a ballet manner, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
right, absolutely. And the kids had a blast, and I dressed them in official uniforms that they looked just like the team. It was really exciting for everybody. And I think the audience really responded to it also.
People did a few double takes at first,
like,
but then they were completely into the
yeah,
programming,
yeah.
so it was great.
So we hope we can have a repeat someday next
cool.
year.
And now you're working on other ways of partnering between the two organizations? I mean, maybe having a player in Nutcracker?
It's shaping up that way.
Okay.
Right now, the team is, for lack of a better term, in flux. The season just ended, so
sure.
we're trying to figure out who is going to be here in the off season. But once mm-hmm. that's determined, it looks like we're going to have a player involved in this year's version of the Nutcracker.
Yes, we're hoping in the next week or two
yes.
we will
announce that
pinpoint and mm-hmm. announce the definitive party parent. So we're really, really excited for this.
That's very cool. That'll be a lot of fun. Let me ask you, too, about Indy 11. you know, you mentioned the involvement in the arts and obviously with the ballet, but also Indy Levin's gotten very involved with Fringe as well as other organizations around town too.
Correct. I mean, Fringe was another unique opportunity we felt we couldn't pass up. I mean, we signed a 5-year sponsorship with them, and we're building an addition to the theater that's already there, and mm-hmm. that's going to be up in February. And the idea is to obviously, you know, present ourselves to that community and vice versa. And then to that end, what we're doing is we're having 11 events throughout the calendar year. We had our first one last Tuesday, which is, sorry for those, it's November 11th. Mm-hmm. It was the 11th of each month. I should know that.
That's right.
But it
that's convenient.
That works out well. But it was a great first event, and we're looking forward to many more. So that's one partnership, kind of one template that we're trying to use across the board of engaging and really trying to provide value back to what we're being given in the community.
The common thread here mm-hmm. is that it's all about community, and that's what the Indianapolis School of Ballet is about. So we're based downtown. We perform downtown. Yesterday we had an event at the Central Library where our dancers performed excerpts of the Nutcracker. And we had over 200 guests there attending this. So, and it's really what we can give back to the community. And I think that's a huge common thread between our organizations.
I completely agree. I mean, our slogan for next year is Indie Forever. I mean, it's really mm-hmm. trying to strengthen our connection to the city and, you know, helping it grow. We're here at a unique time. I mean, mm-hmm. we took off not only because of us. We like to think it's a bunch of factors that came together at the right time, including Absolutely. The city being ready to kind of take the next step in developing itself to be a world-class city. So we just want to add to that.
Very cool. Very cool. What a great partnership. Vicki, before we wrap this up, I want you to give me the dates for the production of Nutcracker at Scottish Rite.
Yes,
for
once
Indianapolis
again.
School Ballet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have five performances again at the Scottish Rite Cathedral beginning December 19th, which is a Friday at 7:30 p.m., on Saturday, December 20th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., and then on Sunday and Monday, December 21st and 22nd, those are 3 o'clock matinees.
Nice.
And tickets are going fast, so please do get them quickly.
Very good, very good. Well, I want to thank you both for coming into Art of the Matter today. Vicki, Travis. Always a pleasure to see you. And Gijo, great to meet you.
Great to meet you as well. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that right now we're in the process of renewing our season tickets.
Absolutely.
With season ticket holders, and always looking to add more season ticket holders for next year. So if you want to check it out, please do so. And check us out at indie11.com for any questions you might have.
Very good.
685-1100.
So we have indie11.com and indieballet.org. I love it.
Excellent. Happy holidays to both of you.
Thank you.
Same
Happy
to
holidays.
You. Happy holidays.
Travis DiNicola with Vicki Liris, Artistic Director of the Indianapolis School of Ballet, and Gijo Gordon from the Indie 11 Soccer Club. The ISB's performances of the Nutcracker take place at the Scottish Rite Cathedral from Friday, December 19th through Monday, December 22nd. More information is available at indieballet.org. Again, indieballet.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Did you shop local last Saturday Small Business Saturday?
Small Business Saturday, of course. Of course I did.
I
Up
had
and down Mass
such
Ave.
Fun. I mm-hmm. did Mass Ave and Broad Ripple. I even went to Columbus, Indiana to shop local.
Goodness.
Because I knew a shop owner. Well, we have some suggestions for places you can shop local if you're right in the middle of that. Oh, I need to get my presents for the winter holidays.
And what better gift than art?
And what better gift than art? On our calendar we call,
What'll We Do? Well, I've got a fun thing. It's actually, if you're listening to us on Thursday night, it's actually going on tonight, but there's other events related throughout the whole weekend. And this is the Designer Plus Artists Equal Arts and Antiques Redux that's presented by Methodist Hospital.
Whack.
And it is taking place over at the Midland Arts and Antiques Market. That's the downtown antiques market on East Michigan Street. And what they're doing is having pairing up, in fact, a whole bunch of different designers plus artists and local designers to create these sort of environments where they've got art and antiques and other things on display, and each one is its own sort of separate piece and separate environment. Really cool stuff. So on Thursday the 4th, the preview party is going on, but then on Friday, December 5th, they've got the Young Collectors After Hours from 5:30 to 8 p.m., and local interior designers are going to be giving advice and demonstrating how to mix styles and vintages. And then on Sunday the 7th, they're doing a brunch with Black Plate Catering. And then on next, let's see, and then throughout the whole weekend, basically, during regular Midland shopping hours, admission to the market is free. But you can view all the cool vignettes for $10. And again, that goes to support Methodist Hospital. But it's a really cool thing to check out, sort of this mix of art and antiques and
designs. I might have to spend the whole weekend there. That sounds like a blast.
Sounds really cool, doesn't it?
I love to see how different designers and different people with the ability to envision different eras together, mix and match things.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So this is taking place again at Midland Arts and Antiques Market, 907 East Michigan Street. And just to name a few of the people involved with it, Turner Woodard and Darlene Delbeck and Deanne Roth and Chris Hansen and, let's see, Tom Vriesman and Ryan Paris and lots and lots and lots of other artists and designers. Phil O'Malley's going to be there. A lot of fun stuff.
Wow, sounds like a great time. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you're hearing us Thursday night, don't forget tomorrow night, this Friday, is First Friday, Friday, December 5th. Of course, you want to make the rounds of all the galleries, but here's something special if you're trekking up and down Mass Ave and maybe doing a little holiday shopping there. Make sure you go to Goulding and Wood, the organ building firm, which is at 823 Mass Ave, so on the far side of college. Why do you want to go there? Well, they're doing an open house from 5 to 9 this Friday. They do this every time they complete an organ build or an organ restoration. They put the organ all together in their shop area and have a bunch of local performers play it so that you can hear it. This Friday, they're featuring Opus 51, which was built for Trinity Episcopal Church in Mobile, Alabama. And they have refreshments, and it's just a great way to get a peek behind the scenes of a whole world that we normally don't get to experience. Once again, that's at Goulding and Wood Organ Builders, 823 Mass Ave, this Friday night, December 5th. If you're hearing us on Saturday morning, I hope you were there last night.
There's a lot of great openings going on for First Friday. In fact, on the 5th, too many to even count. But I do want to mention that the Magnificent Amber group show is taking place at the Harrison Center for the Arts. That's always a fun one. They do a different color each year. And this year, it's playing off of the book Magnificent Ambersons by Booth Tarkington. And so all the artists will have work there. Great place to pick up some gifts. You might also want to check out Gallery 924. That's the Arts Council's gallery, because they're doing the Tiny Three show. Lots of tiny work, not by tiny artists. Big artists, tiny work. Well, maybe not. Never mind. But lots of tiny work is going to be at the Gallery 924 show as well. And in fact, pretty much everywhere else. I mean, my gosh, every gallery in town is going to be open and having art on First Friday and all weekend long.
Indeed. Hey, speaking of art galleries, this weekend is your last chance to see the Indiana Plein Air Painters Association member juried show, which is at the Hoosier Salon Gallery. That's the one at 22 Rangeline Road in Carmel, just around the corner from Mudbugs Cafe, if you know downtown Carmel. That show is up through December 7th, and there are a number of those paintings still for sale, so you might do a little holiday shopping at the Hoosier Salon Gallery in Carmel through December 7th.
Well, Sharon, I've been talking about a lot of nutcrackers the past couple weeks.
Indeed you have. Indeed, I'm starting to worry.
I want to mention another one, and that would be the Ballet Theater of Carmel's upcoming Nutcracker. They are performing at the Carmel High School on Saturday, December 13th. And they're really excited because their program features their kids' dance outreach as part of their cast. And they're also going to be joined by some of the very athletic members of Carmel's High School, who's they're a part of the Ambassadors program. And they're going to be doing a show-stopping athletic Russian dance. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Wow.
2 o'clock and 7:30 at Carmel High School on Saturday, December 13th. And again, that is the Ballet Theater of Carmel's Nutcracker.
I have a little bit of a road trip for my next item. You're not going far. You're just going to West Lafayette. You're going to the Hahn Mansion Museum of Indiana Art. This is a spectacular historic home owned and restored by Bob and Ellie Hahn, who have a terrific showcase of art of all kinds, but in particular paintings by Indiana painters. They're collaborating with the Wabash Valley Trust for Historic Preservation to present a family-friendly holiday tour. The museum features a Christmas train traveling through several rooms decorated with Dickens villages, a gingerbread-style house large enough to accommodate several youngsters, so that's, I don't know what gauge that would be in train language. Multiple animated figures invite kids to touch.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. The end gauge. There you go. Decorated trees, Santa's angels, nativities, Lafayette houses, and Dickens villages fill the museum. That's miniatures of Lafayette houses. The walkthrough tours are available December 6th and 7th, so this weekend. Saturday tours from 10 to 4, Sunday tours from 1 to 4. Tickets $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Children 5 to 17 are half price, 4 and under are free. Please hang on to the hands of the 4 and unders, though. You can get tickets at hanmuseum.org, spelled H-A-A-N, museum.org, hanmuseum.org. And again, that's taking place this weekend. I've been to this museum. It is spectacular, and it's going to be really glorious, all decked out for Christmas.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Hey, if it's getting a little chilly outside, maybe you could use some heat, and I can't think of a better way to generate some of that than going to see Broadway Meets Motown. The Dance Kaleidoscope is putting on now through December 14th at the Upper Stage at the IRT. The first act is all Broadway shows and tunes, including Some Enchanted Evening and Something's Coming, Send in the Clowns, and then Act 2 includes a lot of really fun Motown songs like Say a Little Prayer and Isn't She Lovely, Trouble Man, ABC, all that stuff, and of course Dance Kaleidoscope interpreting it as they will, and that should be a lot of fun. So again, the shows are at the IRT Upper Stage, Broadway Meets Motown, now through December 14th. And if you would like to learn more about local arts events in Indianapolis, then go to indiearts.org/guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website. And we will be back with more ideas next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The ISO's A Yuletide Celebration has something for everyone. Whether you love Frozen, or groove to Time for Three, or giggle at tap dancing Santas, Sharon Gamble invited ISO Director of Communications Jessica DeSanto to tell us more.
Right before I arrived here, I did a little data search, and I was trying to figure out how many total performances we've had of this production. And whoa, starting in that pinnacle year, 29 years ago, 1986, starting from there, I approximate about 737 total performances. And if we average, and we normally have been averaging around 70 to 90% of a capacity house, mm-hmm, that's easily more than a million people have probably seen this production in some way, shape, and
most
form.
Most of the population of Indianapolis.
Yeah. So it certainly has been a 29 creative, magical, celebratory years. And I still say with every bit of confidence, this is the only production of its kind for the holiday season of any orchestra in North America. And it's only because of Jack Everly, our very own principal box
and
conductor.
I know you're far too young to remember when it started, but I know you know some stories. And so do you know what was it just? I can't picture the day where somebody said, oh, our musicians aren't playing enough. Let's put something else in the schedule. But was it more, what can we do to bring more families out? What can we do to program something?
You know, it was actually much more of an accident from what I understand
from
the history books. It's really about, and most orchestras still do this to this day, where they, for the holiday season, would have a Messiah here or a Nutcracker or some sort of other holiday pops sort of show, mm-hmm, over the course of the December time period. And we were no different back in that early 1980s time period. We would have what we would call Yuletide pops. So the word Yuletide was sort of already in our vocabulary. And then it was the 1 year that we weren't able to partner with Butler Ballet, which is what we did for the Nutcracker back then.
Mm-hmm.
We had to create our own, and we kind of had to start from scratch at that point, since we weren't going to do a Nutcracker. We weren't going to just do a Messiah. What could we do? What could we do different? And we realized a variety show was sort of not really approached in orchestral pops before, of a holiday variety show. So it started with some pretty minimal effort at first, just trying to figure out what audiences were attracted to, what musical selections we could perform and bring life to. And then it really started to grow. And once we had some famous folks start to host in the mid to late 90s, you know, the Kay Ballards and
Sandy Patties
and the Daniel Rodriguez, Sylvia. We've had it just started to grow and feel so much more like a Broadway show. And then when Jack becomes a part of the scene in around the mid-1990s, it, of course, has his stamp written all over it. And it is truly his design and now his Pops team of, you know, hundreds of costumers and design folks and production people and flying in from all over the country to help us design these sets and do these arrangements. And many of those musical arrangements are Jack's. So he's not only conducting and creating, but he's arranging. He's got a really big role, and
he's
it's pretty impressive.
He's the impresario, isn't he?
He certainly is.
And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the production, the size and the depth of the production team, because even though elements change from year to year, that's one thing that I think everybody who sees a Yuletide celebration remarks on is how high the production standards are, the production quality is.
We absolutely believe that we make an investment here in Yuletide celebration, and we deliver on a promise of the highest quality show that we can possibly produce within, of course, the generosity of our donors and sponsors and others. But it's just so important, and we want people to come away, no matter how old you are, from the youngest that comes, you know, easily from 4 years on up, we want you to walk away going, wow, that was amazing, and now I'm really in the holiday spirit. And every time, and I've only been at this orchestra for 6 years, but every time I see the exact same response from our families, and even some of the individual excerpts that we do, and we change in and out. Sometimes we do some new things, sometimes we keep the familiar. There's just so much that people adore, and how can you not adore such a wide, expansive songbook that we have for the holiday time period? Yeah. Jack gets to experiment with so much great music, and that's what's important too for Yuletide. It's not just necessarily a Christmas-themed show. Think about the holidays and all they could mean in so many different countries. And we like to adopt as much as we can to diversify this great production. So,
and just even sometimes some of the music just references winter, not even a holiday specifically.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not just religious and themed by any stretch. But for us, it's not even about any sort of religion. It is the religion of music, in fact. Just that music is everybody's vocabulary in so many different ways. And Yuletide gives us, In a very fun way, in a very festive way, a chance to bring it all to life with a full orchestra complement on stage. And again, not very often in North America Pops productions do you see a full orchestra backing up these great musical selections. You know, in the Pops in the Broadway world, you typically see much reduced orchestra, but
yeah,
not here.
Yeah, you see a pit orchestra.
You see a pit orchestra, if you can see the pit at all.
This is going to sound geeky on my part, but I'm always amazed at, my gosh, how do you fit all the instrumentalists on stage? Because you need stage real estate for a host, for your singers, for your dancers, for, you know, whatever the reindeer, whatever the elements happen to be each given year.
We use every bit of square feet
yeah.
on that stage, and we add the extension without trying to hopefully take away too many seats. But we put, you know, our percussionists and our brass ensembles up in the stage terrace area, and we design, if you haven't been to a Yuletide, the entire Hilbert Circle Theater stage is transformed into this massive staging area. It looks like a winter wonderland, and we have to put musicians up in the stage terrace as well as on the main level, and we have to leave as much, of course, room as possible because we have dancing and we have characters and we have puppets, the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas bit that everybody loves. You know, we use every bit of it, though.
Tell us about this year's host and some of the new elements this year.
Well, we are delighted, of course, to have, and anytime we have Indianapolis as a connection, we love it. And Angela Brown is our host, and she is our great native of Indy, and she's a wonderful opera star all across the world, but she is coming back to us. She made her debut with Yuletide in 2012 with her co-host at the time, Ben Crawford, who also returns with us as host this year. So they're going to make a wonderful compliment. They really had a great time 2 years ago as co-hosts of Yuletide. And then for the first time, our artist in residence, Time for Three, will be joining the Yuletide cast. And at this point, Time for Three, again, Zach Depew, Renan Meyer, and Nick Kendall, who are our resident ensemble here at the Indianapolis Symphony, they, at this point, once they finish their run of Yuletide, will have performed in every series. So they have been on the classical series, the pop series, Symphony on the Prairie, Yuletide, Happy Hour, and Family. They have done it
all. They can
all.
Check them all off.
They
check off all those boxes.
Not many people can do that and can easily own so many genres. So we're so proud to have. They're going to bring such a neat energy to the stage. Of course, Angela Brown has got a great voice and a great sense of humor. And Ben is probably one of my favorite baritones. He's just a phenomenal guy, and he loves Indianapolis. So it's going to be a great show.
Fantastic. You have some new packages available for tickets, right?
We do. So if you can't find the seat that you want, we do have some more options for you if you really want to be a Yuletide VIP-er. And we have this capability now for some select shows. If you really want the full VIP experience, you can park right on the circle, so you don't even have to find a place to park.
Huh.
You can have a concierge that will serve you at your seat, to give you cookies and wassail, and make sure you get to the bathroom first, and you know, give you all of that concierge VIP star experience. So we're testing this year to see. We've had a lot of folks tell us before that, you know, they really would love, they love to meet and greet the artists and go behind the scenes. So we're making that opportunity available to you for a certain price. And we want to see what happens and see if these are the kinds of experiences that people want to have. So you can look online for the VIP ticket experience when you look at certain Yuletide dates.
Well, good luck with that. That sounds very creative.
We're going to give it a try.
It's
a value-added proposition.
Right.
So if you really find that that's something that is perfect for you and your family, we have some select dates where you can make that available.
So speaking of families, there might be some people listening to this who are new to town, or maybe they have little people in their lives for the first time. What are your recommendations for what age children this might be appropriate for?
Yuletide really is, and I like to say maybe 3 to 4 is your minimum age group to bring to Yuletide. And I'm a mother of a 12 and 8-year-old, and my 8-year-old, when she was 3, I found that sitting on an aisle seat, so if you need to run to the bathroom, you can. Sitting on an aisle seat on the main floor where she can see everything, I think that is a perfect age to start Yuletide. And again, it's a 2-hour show, but it does have an intermission, 20 minutes. And it's not so highly critical that you sit still necessarily for, you know, the full run of the show. We have a lot of kids in the audience, and we, of course, want to be as welcoming as possible. So if your kid is a little bit of a wiggler, that's okay. It's a really fun show.
Because he or she won't be alone.
They will not be alone. And again, if you can find a nice exit if you need to, I have been in that position as well. That's the best option, I think, for you. And again, all the way, we've had generations of people that have come to Yuletide now and remember so much of the same elements that we like to bring back, because they've just become part of the tradition of the experience. And that we also maybe, 30 to 50% of the show bring out something new. So something that is new that people love, we might keep as a tradition, and some others that we might change on occasion. It's just it's a great mix of so much great music. Some of it can be very festive, some of it can be very poignant. But again, it's going to put you probably in that good holiday spirit, hopefully, by the end of the run.
One of the fringe benefits of your job is that you get to sneak out of your office occasionally and pop in and listen to a rehearsal. Tell us about a couple of favorite moments of this year's Yuletide.
I love when the Tap Dancing Santas start their rehearsal. I love to go down and watch their feet, because I love to watch how that process starts and stops and continues. And this year, I believe there's a bit of new choreography, and I love that. I kind of know the routine just by seeing it now for a couple of years. So I was wondering when they were going to freshen things up, and it looks like this year, Jen Ladner, who's our choreographer, is going to work really hard to present some new stuff. So I love to watch the stepping. I love to hear, I just left the office shortly ago, and I was listening to a bit of the chorus sing in our dress rehearsal hall. And just to have them, you know, be instructed about tone and balance, and they were singing some more of the hymns that I think might be featured this year. You can hear how these kinds of kinks are worked out. I love that stuff. I love hearing how, because again, in the end, you look at the show and you think, God, they make that look so easy. But for months, this ensemble has been working on these musical arrangements, and recently one of our ensemble cast members, they were on the Circle of Light show. They were performing part of the Disney's Frozen excerpts that were going to be featured this year, and I learned behind the scenes that particular arrangement took about 14 renditions of cleaning up, fixing this, trying to do this, go here, harmonics here, do this, you know, just knowing that it takes a tremendous amount of staff hours to perfect what we're trying to do with this show, because again, in the end, it looks so easy. I love those behind the scenes moments. I love to share them too. And I, as a staff member, I don't get to sit in the audience very often,
right?
And be a patron. So it's nice to see what, all the really the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears that happen behind the scenes.
Speaking of behind the scenes, does your office get calls a lot from other orchestras saying we want to start something like that? Do you?
We've actually put Yuletide on the road a bit. We've done Jack's other major orchestra in the country is Baltimore. And he has done some Yuletide-type, Yuletide celebration-type productions in Baltimore and some other orchestras in, through its history. We do, and people want to know how to mimic this sort of success, because it really has been something very true to Indianapolis that I think other markets could certainly look at and see if there's an appetite for it. I'd be the first to say that Yuletide Celebration, of course, had a rather slow start. You know, it didn't just come right out of the gate at the current experience that we provide today. So you have to kind of, you know, you have to keep going. You have to invest in it, obviously, to do it right. But this is truly Jack. So to me, we're so lucky to have it here and to have Jack here. I think if Yuletide goes to other orchestras, it's going to have to be Jack. And I don't want to give up Jack too much, but it's really his production. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see the future and what that looks like as it grows and grows.
Sharon Gamble with the ISO's Director of Communications, Jessica DeSanto. Learn more about a Yuletide celebration at IndianapolisSymphony.org. Again, IndianapolisSymphony.org. And you can get tickets there, too. Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll find out about a special program for poets at the new Eskenazi Hospital.
I'll get a sneak peek at the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit at the IMA.
And I'll find out how the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site is celebrating the holidays. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.